Well, first thing is, I found that article. That was 79. What year were you born?
79.
That's what I thought.
Actually, a lot of the research was done in 79, I've been noticing. Like, Reddy wrote his article in 79.
Yeah, that was the big metaphor, 79, 80. When I wrote that, I had read a draft, one of many pre-publication drafts of Lakoff and Johnson. And so I knew pretty much what was in it. But the book didn't come out until later.
Thank you. And I found an amazing amount of information. So I haven't gotten to get through all of it yet, but
has she gotten recording levels?
I think so.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay, so these were from the web or from the literature?
I found one useful one from the web. Most of them from the web were, it was something that was set up as a conversational thing for a linguistics class, and so it was just questions and replies.
Oh, I see.
And there were 421 entries, and out of the first 50, I think 40 of them were.
Okay.
Were just questions and replies that weren't too helpful.
Uh-huh.
But I did find, I actually found something in Japanese that, if I could find some way to get it translated, because the whole thing was on the conduit metaphor, and there were just random translations into English every third page or so. But
oh, my word.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, ask Jessica, I guess.
Yeah, she said that she's not
that good.
That good with characters. She's better with.
Oh yeah.
So
could be. Still, there's lots of Japanese linguists.
The most exciting thing I found, though, is this. It's Wong Scone and
Scone.
Here's the first page of the abstract.
This is from Multilingual 16-1, 1997. Root metaphors. Okay, yes, I remember that. That used to be the big phrase about the middle of the century. Root metaphors of civilization.
Has a better theory replaced it now, or?
Well, they weren't exactly looking at metaphor. They were more looking for things that motivate cultures.
Okay.
Like the root metaphors of fascism, that sort of thing.
Okay. She looks specifically at Cantonese and English metaphors, and then...
Right. Well, she's got a more modern sense of what metaphor means.
Okay.
Yeah. Based on the human body. Why am I not surprised? That's an interesting take on the American metaphor. An abstract ideal trying to free itself from biological and social restrictions through communication. Yeah. Inside and outside.
And so she said that a container metaphor and a colonization metaphor were the two primary metaphors in English.
What was the first one?
Just the conduit metaphor, the container metaphor.
And then colonization.
And then colonization, right. And she says that it comes from popular American myth of
Westward Ho.
Yeah.
Ooh, that really does cling, you know, that that resonates in a lot of different ways. I like that. Colonization. You get imperialism, you get hegemony, You get the gender wars. You get east, west, north, south.
She also talks about the importance of creative development within the individual.
Creative development?
Right. But within the individual rather than creative development of the entire network, of the entire social network, which is what the Cantonese metaphor is, which is the opposite. But she says that the American metaphor really focuses on the very self-centered creative development of the individual. And I think that works with the colonization idea too, because it's a very small group of...
Yeah, it also suggests that the American view of the self is sort of takes the mind-body difference wholeheartedly and identifies with the mind and isn't integrated with the body, whereas the Chinese metaphor is integrated, and that Chinese individuals are personally integrated and they integrate with their society, which probably has a whole lot more survival value than the American metaphor, as evidenced by the success of Chinese culture. Ooh, that sounds like fun. Colonized self, or the self has been colonized by the body, by...
The self has been colonized by these individual containers for, not necessarily for meaning, but for aspects of the self. So, actually the American data that she has is from Carbaugh's study on Donahue, and so it's from talk shows, and it's a lot of talk about feminist theory and how within the female individual there's an aspect of feminism. And so I think that's what she means by colonization of...
Yeah, I think, well, she's maybe dealing with a gloss. Obviously it's a structure. Obviously it's complicated. And maybe colonization is the best you can get to. But I don't think we should necessarily take the name as meaning too much. But yes, that sounds like definitely worth reading. Yum.
She actually has an appendix in the back, too, of Chinese proverbs.
Oh. Explode big cauldron, reveal somebody else's inside story. Ooh.
Actually, in the last part of that... of her metaphorical analysis of Chinese. What?
Seven mouths, eight tongue, all talking at once.
She says that school teachers say that to classrooms of children, make them be quiet.
Ah, wonderful. Chinese are so earthy. Teeth, brush, brush. To be voluble, to boast of oneself. Teeth, chop, chop, same thing.
And so she was saying that in contrast to the American conduit metaphor, that the Chinese metaphor holds a strict importance on keeping what's inside, inside, and keeping what's outside, outside. So,
and face in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You seriously interested in China?
Yeah. I took the Zhuangzi course last...
Oh,
semester.
You did?
Yeah.
Chuangzi. Oh, exactly. My favorite philosopher. It's the only religious writer that has good jokes.
Yeah.
Ever. Anywhere. In that case, let me recommend a book called Bridge of Birds. It's a fantasy novel. I use it in my metaphors class. Freshman seminar at the RC. It's terrific.
Okay.
And it is a novel, and it's a very fantastic novel. Very Chinese novel, but all the facts, except for the fantastic parts. But it's hard to tell which are fantastic and which are just Chinese, because Chinese history is a little fantastic in places. Are true. I mean, all the almost everybody in the book that's actually sounds like they ought to be a historical personage, was a historical personage, and did something like what they did in the book. So it's, you're never quite sure where you are in this book. Very interesting.
Okay. That was my first introduction to Eastern thought.
Well, that's the right one, I think. Confucius is a waste of time as an introduction, I think. All it does is give you the idea you don't want to go there. But Chuang-Tzu... Okay, so how does this fit in with your experiment?
Okay. I'm starting to realize that metaphors of self in within the American framework and the Chinese framework have a lot to do with the metaphors for communication. And that might be something that's sort of inherent just in the nature of communication, but I thought it was an interesting thing that both Wang Scan and Carba, who were studying communication, put such an emphasis on the different cultural ideas of self.
Well, they're calling it self. The question is exactly which variety of concept they're talking about. There are a number, and they can be distinguished. There's probably whole branches of philosophy that do nothing more than distinguish soul from mind, from self, from personality, from you know, a whole lot of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Id, ego, and I tend to think of it as, well, one of a number of possible ways of the, I tend to think of it as the mind, but you know, that includes all that stuff, and there's a lot of different ways to talk about it. There is definitely an inside going on in almost everything.
I think it's interesting though that from my research, the only part that really matters is the socially realized conception of self. So what comes through in social institutions?
Comes through?
Right. Like...
To whom? From what? Using what channel?
Okay. Through religion, through the dominant literature, philosophy, arts.
Okay.
You look at Chinese literature, and especially, I don't know too much about the subject, but even look at Chuang-Tzu and the fact that the book was compiled.
Inner chapters and outer chapters.
And then the extra outer chapters that don't necessarily have anything to do with, specifically with
Yeah,
Chuang-Tzu
it doesn't exactly
himself.
Read like a novel, does it?
No. And so there really isn't that much of an importance placed on plot. There also isn't an importance placed on individual authorship.
Uh-huh.
It's all called Chuang-Tzu, and no one has really done all that much work to find out who wrote the rest of it, and it really doesn't matter. There probably
no.
isn't documentation.
Mm-hmm.
But in Western literature, the author is really important.
Well, up to a point. There you get into the de re de dicto distinction.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? There's a famous joke about the classic professor who spent his career proving that the Iliad and the Odyssey were not composed by Homer, but by another blind Greek poet of the same name. Whereas Virgil, if you tried to do the same thing about the Aeneid, it wouldn't be a joke. It'd be dull, but it wouldn't be a joke. Because Virgil was a historic personage. We know other things about Virgil. But we know nothing else about Homer, except number one, he was blind, number two, he was Greek, and number three, he composed the Iliad and the Odyssey, or at least did something that stuck his name on those particular tellings of them.
Okay. But what I think is interesting is not necessarily the de dicto de re distinction and what actually matters, but what the different societies think matters. Because...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
So, that's what I think is interesting in the concept of self.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's right. And we don't exactly have... It's not like some things. It's not like metaphors for a number of phenomena where we have physical reality to fall back on as something to reflect them off. But nobody has any idea what self means, if anything, except everybody has the idea that they're inside and everybody else is inside them, their own skulls or bodies or persona or whatever. And that in a sense you can't get out and you can't figure out what's going on other places. So there's a basic container metaphor. But beyond that, it can be elaborated in all kinds of different ways. Could be porous, could be opaque, could be with many doors and windows. And you get into things like houses, Freud's house metaphors. You dream of the house, you're dreaming of your mind. And you're trapped inside secret passages, attics, basements.
See, that's interesting because something that Scanlon said was that one of the really dominant communication metaphors for Chinese is of bodily secretion. So the idea of the container is very porous.
That sounds so Chinese, yeah.
And then one of the dominant metaphors for English, for American English metaphor, is more of a concrete container, more of a house, doors and windows, box.
Mm-hmm. Light in the
container.
Attic. Yes, yes. I wonder if the Chinese, if the homunculus ever, the theory ever had any currency in Chinese philosophy. I don't know. You know, the homunculus is up here, there's this person behind your eyes who's sort of driving. And the question is, you know, what's in their head? Well, it's another one even smaller, etc. As long as it's tail recursive, then it's okay. You know, each one gets simpler and simpler. But you do run the risk of infinite regress. But it sounds like the Chinese don't bother with that. They're there, and they're one person, and there's no nonsense.
And it seems like the important part is that they're within the social network. Not that they're one person is a creative, autonomous being, but that they're part of the social structure and of their own family structure.
Sounds right. Sounds right. I mean, something has to give this incredible strength to Chinese culture. I mean, it's minimum 2,500 years old. And while it's been changed real slowly, and it's resilient and it's tough as hell. Just unbelievably successful. Roman culture isn't around anymore. Greek culture isn't around anymore. Old English culture isn't around anymore. Chinese culture just keeps on plugging. That would make an interesting thesis there. While we're on the subject of houses, let me recommend another book. It's The Poetics of Space by Gaston Bachelard. He's a philosopher.
Yeah.
Oh, you know the book?
I know the philosopher.
It's about houses.
B-A-U-D-R-I-L-L-A-R-D?
Huh?
B-A-U-D-R...
No, B-A-C-H-E.
Oh.
L-A-R-D. Bachelard.
Oops. Then no, I don't know who he is.
Okay. I think he's an epistemologist or something. Anyway, this is one of his side ventures, but it's a hell of a book. It's about what all the different parts of the house mean, and the different rooms. And like closets are for keeping clothes, which are roles, social roles, coming out of the closet, being in the closet. We have this repertoire of roles that we play in different circumstances, and what the attic's for, how you go back to a house that you grew up in, and you find yourself looking at the same place in the corner and thinking the same thoughts and having the same conversations with the same people and opening the doors with the same gesture, and it's just freaky. Great book. All right, so now were we including Chinese on the...
Yes, and I have to say this makes me tempted to just do English and Chinese, but...
Got a theory, yeah.
But I still think that, actually, the interesting thing that I found from the Kaepernick search was... study written in Japanese but translated into English.
Ooh.
Cognitive metaphor.
Sakuhiraga.
And this was written in Japanese and all of the conduit metaphor information translates.
Right up to date, Turner and Fauconnier, blending, my. Connecting things of similarity is one of the basic operations of the human mind. I was just looking yesterday at what Aristotle says about metaphor. He says something on the order of metaphor, use of metaphor implies an eye for similarities.
I've noticed that Aristotle is cited in a lot of these.
Say which?
I've noticed that Aristotle is cited in a lot of this research.
Have you read the Poetics?
I've read some.
That's about all that's necessary. A lot of it is about this meter for that stuff and that meter for this stuff, and who gives a shit if you don't speak Greek, you know. But what he says about metaphor is right, I think. And he hit on it. He says it's, in fact, that's what the superscript on my paper is. Palude megaston to metaphoricon and I, by far the greatest thing is metaphor.
I think the best part about this article is the
ooh.
Diagrams.
Oh, yes, yes, this is a...
Mm-hmm. He plays a lot with this. That.
Uh-huh.
Starts out with kind of a simple...
This is a Fauconnier-Turner thingy.
Okay.
Their stuff works pretty good. The problem is that it's so general that I can't see that there isn't anything that isn't a blend.
Okay. So the generic space...
Generic space what? Yeah?
Is that... Actually, there's a better... Sorry, I keep flipping the pages on you, but...
Mm-hmm.
You have the input and the output.
Uh-huh.
Is the generic space just the framework that connects the two? I mean, really simply speaking.
Yeah. Essentially, that's where you store. That's where you store common properties.
Okay.
And it's like the tongue ready position, right? The thought-ready position. Blending, source target. Yeah, right, that's the generalized one. Mm-hmm. So essentially some things are going to be generic. In other words, you inherit them from a higher unit. Do you know any much about programming?
A little.
What have you studied? See?
Actually, I haven't technically studied programming, but I have some outside knowledge of it, so.
You have?
Just some knowledge of it from working with the project.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, there's this kind of programming called object-oriented programming. And it's ordinarily programming started off with, you know, everything was do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. It's all ordered. And then it turned out that the smart way to do it was to define large, complicated structures, very much in the way SGML does. And once you define that stuff, then you can write a program for that particular thing. Like, suppose you want to add complex numbers. Well, you can't just use a regular plus. So you have to have a special meaning of plus for complex numbers. So, but you don't want to have to try and worry about, is this a complex number? Do I use this plus or that plus or something else? So what you do is you say, I won't worry about, is this a number? I'll just send it a plus and let it decide which plus to use, because it knows. That's called operator overloading. Plus is an operator, and it's overloaded because it has one meaning in this context, one meaning in that context, one meaning in some other context, and so on. And that's this kind of thing. These are the generalized things, but in this particular context, they take on special meanings.
Okay.
Yeah, I've sat through lots of talk by Mark and Gilles, and I think I understand what they're doing when I'm watching them do it, but then I go off and try to do it, and I think, why am I going to all this trouble? I mean, what's it getting me? It looks more like that than it does. That's going to be hard to capture on the tape, probably.
Hand gestures.
Oh, well, details.
Just from looking at this at first, what I thought immediately was that it might be a way to correlate this idea of the self with conversational metaphor. Mm. Using some kind of a model like this.
Mm. Yes. Yes, I think that's right.
That was how I thought of it.
Yes, I think that's right. Well, I clearly the self is a product of conversation, of communication. As you say, it comes through. That's all we can know about other people is what we observe and what we communicate with them and the inferences we draw and how well they're our internal predictions are met or exceeded or abashed by various things. There's a sense in which communication and the self sort of mutually create each other, so that would make them a good candidate for this sort of thing. Did they go through, I've forgotten what, there's a special name for a special, one of their best examples, Turner and Fauconnier, is, X is the Y of Z. Did they run through those things?
Not in
like,
this.
Gurgitch Hills is the Chateau Mouton Rothschild of California wines. So you've got three things, and you can set it up to show how they work, and what it means to say that sort of thing. And they can even get reflexive. Like one I actually heard, Cadillac is the Rolls Royce of American automobiles, or of automobiles in general. It's wait a minute. And yet it works.
Of automobiles in general?
Yeah. I mean, it's you can see that, well, it may be a Stengelism, but it sort of works. Anyway.
Okay.
So, what are you planning to do with this?
Okay. So.
We now have Chinese and Japanese in the hopper.
Chinese and Japanese. I also found books about German and Spanish.
About
metaphor in German and Spanish.
Ah, okay.
So. I have all four languages that I wanted to do at first covered,
and theories coming out every pore.
Yeah.
All right.
So I would like to just stick with those four languages.
Okay.
What
sounds
I did
good.
Notice, though, was that because Japanese can have the conduit metaphor, I was wondering if it might be better to choose a different Asian language that might not. Maybe even something like a Middle Eastern language, or even Korean or Thai.
Well, if you want a suggestion of an Asian language that's accessible and different, I'd recommend Malay or Indonesian.
Okay.
Same language, just different, spoken in different countries.
Okay.
Bahasa Melayu, or just Bahasa. And let me see. I don't know how that works.
I actually have an uncle who speaks Malay. He could help me with translation.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Okay.
Malay is very easy. In fact, do you know Joy Rowe? Maybe not. She was in Field Methods last fall, but then we did Malay. And
oh, she's the other.
Yes.
Chair of the linguistics.
That's right. That's right. Glasses.
Yeah. Okay.
She's around now, but she might. I don't know whether she's interested or not, but she knows something about Malay. I know Malay.
Okay.
And there's tons of Malay speakers around.
All right. Great.
And available by email. It's very very wired country.
Brings us to the next point. I was talking to Jessica about research methods.
About?
Research methods in general. And
she's very orthodox now, working with Bob. Or Dave, rather.
And she suggested that all of my participants come from either this country or the countries where they speak their native languages. So,
as opposed to what? Where are they supposed to come from?
Well, no. I'm saying that people who either speak German and live in the United States are native speakers of German who live in the United States, rather than my native speakers of German coming from Switzerland and my native speakers of Chinese coming from
Asia. Oh, you mean you're not going to be able to distinguish the part that's due to German and the part that's due to American culture?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's true. On the other hand, American culture is our greatest export, and it's everywhere.
That's true. That's very true.
I'm not sure you can control for that.
I'm wondering if it would be a confounding experiment. I didn't explain that very well, but what I mean is, should I have non-native speakers who live here, or non-native speakers who live in their native country?
Well, I would recommend that you choose one and not do both, because that way, if you do both, you're introducing an uncontrolled variable.
Right.
The question would be, which would be most interesting? I would guess you're likely to get the most diverse results by sticking with people that aren't in the U.S.
Okay. I think I have a broad enough base.
The more variation you get, the more variation you get to explain. If everybody talks the same, it's boring.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay. The only other thing that I want to ask you about, I also want to give you, I redid this, and I haven't randomized the order. So
you haven't?
No.
Okay.
So that task is still in the order of major framework first, minor framework second. And then I finished the paraphrasing task, but A, B, and C are always the same rule. So A is always...
Those will be randomized too.
Correct. Yeah. They
fine.
Will be. But I just left them like that, so it would be easier than
sure.
C.
Okay, that's fine. Well, then you get to see how parallel the distractors are. All right, let's see. Since below, please rate them on scale. On how easy you think they are to understand. A rating of 1 means that the sentence is easily understandable, and a rating of 5 means the sentence is very difficult to understand. Rating of 3 is neutral. sentence may be awkward, but it is understandable. This is a study on your intuitive understanding of these sentences. It is not a test of grammar, and there is no correct answer. It's very difficult to get the idea across. Yeah, nice variation of the words like concepts and theory and conceptualizations. Information. Didn't come in here. That's a good one. I like that one. That's a nice ambiguity. Are they all going to be ambiguous, the bees?
Bees are all ambiguous.
Okay. Getting into deeper waters here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Fell before they reached her. Your false feelings, I can finally take in your real feelings. I can't seem to get these ideas into words. These ideas are difficult for me to express. These ideas aren't the kinds of things that fit into words. These are too small for my ideas. That's great. Sam's words. Sam's words fail to convey compassion. Sam does not use words that have compassion. Sam's words are unable to feel compassionate. Mm-hmm. I have to struggle to get any meaning out of all, at all out of the sentence. I cannot comprehend what that sentence means without struggle. I have to struggle to make the sentence have meaning. I hope that's voice activated or there's going to be just long swatches. Empties her sorrows onto the beach.
Mm. I started out with that example, just as Mary poured out her sorrows. But then I realized that I needed some kind of a surface.
Uh-huh.
So that she could do the pouring onto something.
Uh-huh.
Without it seeming too contrived, so
onto
that's why
the
I added
beach,
the bench.
Yeah. If you go to the library and find the right book, you will find your thoughts there. Oh, the right book. This is almost beginning to sound like Borges. Written in the books in the library. Your thoughts are already written in the books in the library. Hmm. That's going to be interesting. Yes, okay. Looks sort of nicely balanced all around.
Good, thanks. The last thing that I was considering was a translation task. And I can see that as being something very messy.
Yeah, I can too.
So...
Because... Well, let's see. With German and Spanish, you're not going to have character problems. Chinese and Japanese, you are going to have character problems.
That's true.
And then...
Oh, especially through email.
Huh? Well,
drafting the survey through email.
But there's several different ways to encode characters, and people vary on what they use. So then you have to reconstruct the characters, then you have to figure out what they mean. Then you basically get to the meaning after you've been through about four or five steps. I think that one would be way too messy for a pilot.
Okay.
At least with those languages. for Malay or Spanish or even German, I think you could cope, but not with the ones where you don't have an alphabetic writing system.
Okay.
That's just too much. And in fact, this is supposed to be a pilot. Okay.
I feel like I've already done a pilot.
All right. Well, now you got a co-pilot.
But yeah, it's changing enough that I can see the need for.
Yes, and I think this one's more sophisticated. So, and plus, if you ask for a translation task, you're introducing many more ideas and many more sort of tasks that are going to stimulate other things. And that's going to be very uncontrolled, because free translation is quite uncontrolled. You've heard of Pete Becker tells me that when he does a web search on his name at A.L. Becker, he finds that mostly he's referred to on the web in terms of Becker's demonstration, as it's now called. He didn't know it was now called that, so he's finding, which is, he does it in classes and lectures sometimes to demonstrate exactly how variable talk is. And the bigger the audience, the better. He says, I'm going to do something. I'll say start, then I'll do something, then I'll say stop. I want you all to pay very close attention to me, and then I want you to write down what I did. Then he says start, and he usually like walks up to a table, drops a book on the table, and then says stop. And then they all write it down. And then they collect them. No two have ever been alike. Think about it.
Fascinating, yeah. Okay, good point.
Yeah. And that's all in one language.
There's something like that in a philosophy class with describing, the professor draws a square up on the board, and the students have to describe what he just did.
Yep. There you go. Right.
Okay.
That's there's something, actually it's something like that in Bateson. The one with the diagram.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think we're clicking on enough epistemological ideas here. All right. So, is this beginning to sound more like it might be a be or become a thesis idea?
Yes. And
okay.
I'm starting to look more into. Actually, my research on this has led me into more philosophical realms of the same question. So, I would definitely need to have either a two-part thesis, I think.
A two what?
A two-part thesis for linguistics and philosophy.
Oh, shucks, we can get closer than that, don't you think? No?
I don't know. I've never really come across a philosophical text with research in it. And so that uses research. I'm not really sure how I incorporate the two. But I'd be interested to look more into that and see how I could combine them.
Okay. Well, there's no problem from the linguistic side. We steal philosophy all the time. No problem. So I would guess, find out from the philosophy side what they think about empiricism.
And then I was also considering doing something separate for each. And I'm not sure if I started that this summer, because I won't be starting my philosophy thesis until winter.
I think
so
it'd be more fun to see if you could put it together. After all, you know, there's not two of you.
Mm.
You may be getting a double degree, but you don't have two brains. It all goes to the same place. So I'd say your task, in fact, is to integrate it.
Okay. I'll start talking to some people in the philosophy department and see what I can do.
Find somebody that that you seem to click with, that's interested in the ideas, and that you're interested in their ideas. And
oh, and I found the name of the new professor of philosophy language, Jason Stanley.
Who?
Stanley from Cornell.
Scanlon. No, I haven't heard of that, but it sounds like fun. Richard Scanlon?
No, Jason Stanley.
Jason, oh boy. Jason Stanley.
Right.
Okay, there we go. Jason Stanley. Okay, I could do a web search and find out his publications. But probably be just as easy to wait till fall and find out from
about
him.
It.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. And so are you signed up for his class? A class with him?
Actually, he's just teaching the honors intro for this fall. And then I think winter he'll start teaching more upper-level philosophy of language classes.
Okay. Is he brand new PhD, assistant professor, or is he tenured?
I believe he's tenured. He's been teaching at Cornell for a while. So.
All right. Well, in that case, he might be looking for students. You could do worse than go up and introduce yourself and find out what he's interested in.
Definitely.
Yeah.
As soon as I think he gets here this fall. He still hasn't moved from Ithaca yet. So. Great.
All right. So then you got subjects?
I have an idea of subjects. I'll start contacting the people who... the girl I know who's living in Switzerland for the summer. Now for Spanish, I have some contacts in Ecuador and some in Bolivia.
Let me see.
Not
I have
sure.
Some in Mexico.
Okay.
And, no, those are Brazil, that wouldn't work. Let me work on it. Oh, you know, there are a number of other people around that have contacts, though. You could put a message out to, you know, the linguistics faculty. Say, I would like to be able to talk to, or to do a little experiment via email with native speakers of the following languages. If you happen to know of any that you wouldn't mind me sending a little questionnaire to, just send their email.
Okay.
What kind of response rate are you looking for? That's going to be the issue. They're not there, and they're not taking your course, you know, so.
Yeah, well, the last time we had 12 native speakers of English and 12 non-native. And we really only carried out the research for a week and a half, 2 weeks, since it was a group project and we did have kind of short notice. We didn't really have the time to get that many participants, but I think the fact that in that short of an amount of time that many people replied, a lot of people replied the next day. I think it's because email is non-invasive. It gets there quickly and it comes back right away.
Mm-hmm. Nobody can tell whether you've seen it, and if you want to ignore it, you can ignore it. And yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right, so I guess you just keep going until you get an adequate response rate.
Yeah, and I don't even know what to expect for that.
Right. Well, how many, you got to have a statistically significant size, right? What kind of N are you looking for, ideally, in terms of responses?
Ideally, I would like 25 from each group. And then
25 each
with,
language?
Yeah, 100 speakers.
Okay. All right. It doesn't seem it would
doesn't
be like
too
difficult.
Huge.
No. Uh-uh. Are they all getting the same variants on the same questionnaire? Everything's in English. Not going to do the translation task. There's only those two tasks. You can randomize it without any difficulty. Yeah. And then Yes, I would say that's a pretty simple protocol. Have you looked into what statistical tools you're planning to get out of this? I mean, to use with it?
I haven't looked at that yet.
Okay.
I did some psych research and used SPSS to find statistical significance, so I'm familiar with it. I would like to take Stats 402, though. Maybe this
okay.
summer.
Well, when you get results, you can always go over to the stat lab and ask to talk to a consultant.
Okay.
And they'll give you a clue on various things. Let me see. Yeah, I think most things in this are pretty independent. And there's... Yeah, I think there's a number of things you could do. Okay. And they might be able to think of something really fancy that because of the way it's set up. In fact, it might not hurt to take your current instrument over there and have somebody just take a look at it and ask what kinds of problems there might be with it.
Next week, same time?
Sure.
Okay, great. Yeah,
okay, moving right along here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Very good.
Seems like I'll be able to get this out in
yeah.
a couple weeks.
Well, you're certainly doing a nice literature search.